Chapter 10. What Might Have Been. I was very excited at the prospect of going to the clinic for the first time. When the ambulance arrived at the hospital, Dr. Warnant met me and lifted me onto his back. He carried me into the hospital grounds towards a long, wooden building. The doctor pushed open the door and went in, still carrying me over his shoulder. The moment we entered, the full force of the noise hit me. Children were crying, roaring, screaming, banging toys and anything they could find against the walls and floor, kicking their legs in the air, stamping their feet, crawling and wriggling like crabs over one another. It was awful. I wondered if I had been taken to the wrong place, for there was not one child there over 3 years of age. The only other adult in the room besides Dr. Warnant and myself was Mr. Gallagher. He smiled when he saw me. "No treatment this morning, Christy," said Dr. Warnant with a smile as he went past me carrying two babies in his arms to the other end of the room. "Just relax and watch." And yet it was treatment in itself, just watching. It was an education in human suffering. A new, rather frightening experience for one who had never seen life beyond the walls of his own home. Suddenly, I realized for the first time what I had looked like as a child. Instead of pity, I began to feel a link with those children that enabled me to see and to feel the real personalities which lay behind the grotesque faces and tense limbs. It was a kind of brotherly insight that let me see beyond the twisted muscle and bone to the imprisoned minds that lay inside. I realized that I was not the only one that was shut behind prison bars. When I got home that day, all the family gathered round me, wanting to know what the clinic was like. But I could say nothing, for I had seen something and felt something that no words of mine could describe. After about a week at the clinic, I was slowly initiated into the treatment. I found that it was similar to that which I had been receiving at home, but the exercises at the clinic were more detailed, more intricate, and a lot more arduous to perform. At first, to be honest, I felt rather silly while doing them. I felt I was a ridiculous sight, sitting among a room full of kids, going through the same exercises as them. Often, as I pulled myself along on my stomach among the children, I wasn't allowed to move about on my bottom as I used to do, I stopped suddenly, as though becoming aware of my surroundings for the first time, and looked around at all the crippled children lying on the floor, at the faces of Dr. Warnant and Mr. Gallagher as they bent over the children, at the wooden walls with their high windows through which I caught glimpses of blue sky and white cloud and the green trees in the garden outside. I saw all these things, and I paused and asked myself, what am I, Christy Brown, doing here? What does all this mean to me? What have I to do with all this? Why am I here, in this queer place, instead of writing in the bedroom at home? Many times, as I sat huddled on the floor, staring in front of me, I felt a toe nudging me from behind. I jumped and looked around, and there was Dr. Warnant standing above me and smiling. "Daydreaming again," he said to me. "Thinking of all the books you're going to write some day, eh? Snap out of it, old boy. There's a job to be done, you know." Yes, I knew there was a job to be done. A job, in fact, that would take a lifetime. I knew that quite well. And yet I couldn't help stopping and thinking of all that had happened to me before I realised that such a job could be done. I couldn't help thinking now and then of the bad old days, the days when I had nothing but the pain and inner anguish that grew along with an awareness of myself and the affliction that I hated and couldn't understand.